Just to make sure you're in the right place, this is choosing a cross-platform dev strategy, WPD 203. It's probably more of a developer session, sort of at a high level. We're going to be looking at a little bit of code, and hopefully it can inform some of your decisions about cross-platform development in your enterprise, or potentially for consumer applications as well. My name's Mitch Denny, there's my email address there. Feel free to shoot me an email. I'm happy to take questions via email. There's my Twitter handle there, and there's my blog that I occasionally post things to. But it's great if this could be an interactive session as well. So if you've got a question, wave out to me, and I'll listen to what you've got to say, and I'll probably repeat the question since everyone else has got earphones on. But feel free to do it any time to ask a question. Okay, so as I said, this session's about choosing a cross-platform development strategy, and that's a particularly important topic right now, as a lot of enterprises are going through quite a transformation with the way that their workforces use technology. There's some interesting statistics. 84% of Australian mobile subscribers are currently using a smartphone. That should probably be no surprise to everyone in this room. I'm pretty sure everyone in this room would have a smartphone. I won't ask the one or two people that don't, according to these statistics, to point themselves out, but I think our audience is probably skewed in a certain direction. Another interesting statistic is that 42% of major Australian carrier revenue is derived from data. That means two things. Maybe we're paying too much for data, right? Or maybe data is an increasingly important part of mobile communications. About 67% of people are using a personal device for work, and that's regardless of whether work actually ordains that that's an appropriate thing to do. Most people would at least have their company email on their personal device. A few of us carry multiple devices. I carry three mobile phones with me on a regular basis. But most people are at least trying to have one device, and they've got their personal and their work stuff on that device. If they've got a tablet, they might be trying to access corporate applications via that tablet, or potentially on the mobile device as well. Now, this reads a bit funny, but 11% of end users access business applications from the corporate office 100% of the time. Said another way, 89% of users access corporate systems outside the office, at least at some point in time. So no matter what your corporate policy is around bring your own device, people have already done it. The horse is bolted. And of course, there's plenty of consumer application usage as well. Of course, 100% of these statistics are made up by people with vested interest in mobile technology. But it doesn't take a research team to tell you that there's a profound impact that mobility and cloud computing is having on society, both in the way that we spend our leisure time and the way that we work. About 62% of companies are currently or planning to have a bring your own device policy. And when you look at the state of smartphone operating system market share, you can see that creates an interesting challenge. Despite the headlines, Android is probably the most popular operating system in the marketplace right now. iOS has got a respectable showing. Windows Phone is creeping up. And I think the other one's BlackBerry there, which I think sort of currently slowly diminishing. It's kind of had its boom times. That's kind of an interesting view. One of the things about mobile operating systems is they grow and wane in terms of popularity. And so when you consider a refresh cycle on mobile devices in developed countries, which sort of is somewhere in the 2-year range, unfortunately I don't have Australian statistics here, but you can see roughly in a lot of developed countries, phones are cycling every 2 to 3 years at least, that it's actually possible to get some fairly large swings in the mobile operating systems you can have to support. Now, I'm not saying this to say, hey, Windows Phone's gonna catch up. What I'm saying is, if mobile phone operating system popularity swings so much and you've got a BYOD policy, well then you actually have to plan for cross-platform development. You can't pick a winner. So that's what this session about is your cross-platform development strategy. So what are the key considerations that you've got when you're developing cross-platform applications? Well, I'm not going to start talking about technology first, right? What I'm going to talk about is some of the business issues, some of the user issues that surround this decision. The first one is understanding the kind of application that you're developing. Is it a B2B application? Is it a B2C application? Is it an internal use only application? The things that you're willing to compromise on in each of these scenarios will be different. So who's familiar with the Uber application? Right, so Uber's starting to take off here in Melbourne, pretty popular. And from our point of view, are there any taxi drivers in the audience? Any Uber drivers in the audience? No? Okay. So from our point of view, Uber is a B2C application. We are establishing a relationship with Uber, and someone turns up, picks us up, and drives us to our destination. We pay Uber, who ultimately pays someone else. B2C. But for the driver, it's a B2B application. The driver is a business, right? Uber is a business, and Uber has given that organization an application to use to conduct their business transactions. And if you've ever watched Uber in the car, they sort of tell you where they should go and all that kind of stuff, right? So they've got two applications depending, or two scenarios based on what your usage model is. And of course, your internal applications is not an application that you necessarily share with anyone else. This might be an app that you use if you're a delivery truck driver that you use to take signatures or map your route, for example. And that's kind of just an obvious scenario. So that's one dimension that you need to consider when you're developing a cross-platform mobile strategy. What kind of application is it? The next consideration is the user base casual or active? So if you have a very active user base, so imagine most people here probably are Facebook users, you probably use that Facebook application on a fairly regular basis. It warrants having something running on the device which improves that experience. But other applications are more casual. They might even be once-off usage scenarios. So for example, if I've got a website that someone needs to use once a year, and I don't need any further interaction with that person for my business to be successful, do I need an application? So there might be a different kind of way to approach that kind of mobile development. Cost is obviously a consideration. If you've got to support multiple devices out there, well then you need to figure out how much it's going to cost you to build that and support all of those devices. We don't live in a one operating system town, and so we need to figure out the most cost-effective way of doing something. Time to market is also a critical consideration. So if you're going to support multiple platforms, is there a way you can do it to hit more platforms simultaneously? Or do you have to build the user interface for each platform separately? And one of the things that I'm not going to really talk about too much in this talk is getting the back end right. So if you're going to build a mobile application and the platforms are changing regularly, well then try and put as much of your logic on the back end as possible, so you can accommodate that change. So you're just sort of reskinning your application for the new platforms as they come through. Deployment's a challenge, right? So if you're a bank and you build a smartphone application, you want to know that if you need to do something quickly, like push out an update, that you can do that. You don't want to necessarily have to wait for a week. So you might approach the way that you build that application a little bit differently to allow that kind of rapid patching. Increasingly, the vendors, I think Microsoft's time to approve applications is coming down. I'm sure the other vendors are as well. They're all trying to streamline that process. But for them, it's really about end user security. They don't want inappropriate applications slipping out into the market, which might compromise their users. But you need to think about how you're going to service your applications once you've shipped it. It's actually even harder when you're doing internal deployments, because the options there are a bit interesting. Your corporate policies around the devices that you can use is also important. So are there devices that you have to use, even if you're supporting bring your own device? Does your device that you're supporting need to support sort of sandboxing of corporate data to support remote wipe? Most platforms have remote wipe these days. But you need to think about that when you're building your application. Is the way you're building the application suitable for those sort of remote wipe situations? Can you remote wipe your application and just its data without remote wiping all of the user's data? So the scenario that I think is pretty common is, you know, I've got photos of my son on this phone, and let's say that my backup strategy is not as complete as it should be. You should all be using OneDrive or something like that to back up your photos, but just in case, just say I wasn't, or just say that I had a really great photo, and then someone at the office decided to remote wipe my device. And instead of wiping just my business data, they wiped all my personal photos as well. How impressed do you think I'm going to be? All right. So you need to think about that when you're supporting a bring your own device policy, and you have to and think about the impacts of your cross-platform development on that as well. The cross-platform frameworks you choose are impacted quite a bit by user preference. We're going to look at a whole bunch of ways of delivering an experience on multiple different platforms today. But I have sat in meeting rooms where executives have said, no, it has to be a native application, or no, it has to be a HTML or JavaScript application, because they've heard that one is better than the other, or they've had some sort of personal experience which has been negative with a particular application. So you need to factor that in as well. And you can try and educate, but sometimes those who pay the bills call the shots. And finally, you need to think about your testing options. If you're going to build a cross-platform application, or you're going to support cross-platform development, how are you going to test those apps? Are you going to be duplicating your testing effort for every platform? Or is there a way of getting more leverage out of using a particular framework to reduce your testing burden? So what are the options? First of all, I believe that cross-platform development exists on a spectrum. There are lots of different options, and they range from what I would call a mobile web experience up to 100% native, you know, pure native experience. And then somewhere in between there, not necessarily drawn to scale, you've got web-based technology sitting inside a native application, so a hybrid web application. Or you've got another technology which might be using a non-native technology with a transpiler or some sort of runtime that runs inside the device so that you can use your existing skills. So what we're going to do first is just have a really brief look at mobile web. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but just to level set. Because some of these frameworks are used for hybrid web development as well. So what I'm going to do is just jump across to my machine here. So I'm going to be doing a little bit of iOS running here, so that's why I'm running a Mac here. But what I've got on my machine here is Visual Studio. It's running in a virtual machine. And what I'm going to do is just show you some of the common web technologies that people are using today to build mobile web applications. Just bring up my notes. So if I go and create a simple website, this is not going to be pretty. This is just going to be functional, right? And I create a web app. I'm just going to create an empty one. One of the common frameworks that people use when they're doing mobile web application development is AngularJS. Who's heard of AngularJS? Pretty much everyone. Okay, so this is just a quick level set for those who haven't. So when I install the package, what happens is it goes off to NuGet, pulls down a bunch of packages and dumps them onto my machine here. It'll take a few moments. Angular's got all these localized files, which takes forever for Visual Studio to chug through, particularly on a VM. Okay, almost done. And what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna open up a HTML file and I'm gonna decorate it with some markup that supports Angular. And create some controllers and just sort of demonstrate the kind of technology you use for that sort of client-side mobile experience. Because of course the reason we do this is we don't want to have to go back to the server all the time on a mobile device just for user interactions. So we don't want sort of that post and navigate model. Okay, so I've got AngularJS installed. And what I'm going to do is create a JavaScript file. I'm going to call it controllers.js. And what I'm going to do is create an app for Angular. So I'm going to go app equals Angular module. No dependencies to speak of. I'm going to call it task app. There we go. And then with that app, I'm going to define a controller. I'm going to call it task controller. And that controller is defined by this function, which takes a scope argument. And this is going to be a list of phones that I've got here on my desk. So on that scope, I'm going to define a phones property. And it's going to be an array of objects. And I'm going to have a vendor. Sorry, an OS. I'll call it Windows. I'm going to have a model. Okay. Apologies for the keyboard. I've got all my keyboard bindings are all over the place. Android Nexus 5. So we've got a couple of flagship devices there. Okay, so that's my controller all set up, and now what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop into my index.html file. I've got to create one. Just a plain old HTML file. And what I do is I tell it that this is a Angular application, so I think it's task app, I called it, and it's got a controller. It's bound to the HTML, to the DOM. And I'm going to load in the Angular scripts. And I'm going to load my controllers as well. Okay, and then what I want to do is I want to have a list of those phones on the screen. So I'm going to create an unordered list, and I'm going to repeat phone in phones. Pretty straightforward content, and then I'm going to have my model, and then in brackets I'm going to have the operating system. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to filter that based on an input at the top of the screen. Okay, and hopefully, if I haven't made a typo, I should get a page with nothing. What have I done wrong? Certainly got three objects. Have I got the... That's more like it. So now I've got my three objects, and the whole idea of using Angular is it allows you to build sort of application style mobile web apps, right? And that's kind of, you know, the kind of experience you want if you're going to build a mobile website that's got some real functionality behind content. The next thing I want to look at is kind of that responsive user interface. So who's heard of CSS media queries? Okay, most people, okay. So if you're building a mobile website, CSS media queries are a way of changing the CSS rules that describe your page based on things like the resolution of the browser or the number of pixels of the browser. So to give you a concrete example, if I go to the Redify homepage, So this is our full sort of page browser window. Now, without refreshing the page or going to a separate URL, I can resize that page and notice that the layout changes considerably, and I've got sort of this doc menu. So this is using CSS media queries, and it's kind of a responsive design technique. Now, in this particular website, it's kind of handcrafted CSS media queries from a company we do some work with, because I'm certainly no designer. But if you want to get started with sort of responsive design for mobile web applications, and this knowledge is transportable to hybrid web applications as well, what you can do is when you create a new web application, pick a template, and often a lot of the templates that come with ASP.NET have this framework in them called Twitter Bootstrap, or it's now called just Bootstrap. And Bootstrap is kind of like this building blocks of HTML that you can use to get this responsive design out of the box. And it's a pretty good way of building things. So if I kick off this application again, or this new application, and I maximize the screen, and it spins up. Okay, so there's my user interface. I'm just out of the box with a template, and notice as I resize, then the navigation changes. So the layout of the entire screen changes around. So these are the technologies. Things like Angular, things like Bootstrap are the tools that you use to build responsive web applications. Now, in this particular application, there's a whole bunch of other frameworks that they use. And what I would recommend is if you're going down this path, spend the time to get familiar with things like Bootstrap, things like Angular, probably Angular over Knockout these days. It seems to be more dominant, but some of the templates come with Knockout for things like data binding. And also SAMI, but if you take SAMI plus Knockout, well, then you get something like Angular. That's the way I sort of think about it. So that's mobile web. So the thing is that when it comes to websites, all the cool kids are building mobile websites first. So if you're starting a new web application development project, don't start by building a full screen browser application. Start by building a mobile experience, all right? Because for a lot of things, particularly things for casual users, it may be the first experience they have with your application. If you're building sign up forms for things, mobilize them first, right? Because it's probably easier. You don't have to worry too much about the layout. A lot of things like Bootstrap take care of it for you. But that's where a lot of the traffic trends are going. So let's talk about this next bit. Hybrid web applications. So hybrid web applications borrow on that sort of foundational knowledge around JavaScript-based scripting frameworks and CSS and HTML, and takes it and puts it inside an application package which can be deployed to a device and actually run on the device instead of sort of this interplay between the device and a web server. So you can run completely self-contained on the device. So I'm going to cover a couple of things right now. I'm going to cover a framework called Apache Cordova. And I'm sort of building up to looking at this thing called Visual Studio Multi-Device Applications, that bottom one. But I'm going to look at Apache Cordova, and I'm going to look at a framework called the Ionic Framework, which is a popular framework at the moment. And then I'm going to look at a new tool called Visual Studio MDA, which is currently in tech preview at the moment. So let's jump in. So Apache Cordova is it's a framework for building applications that run on iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Kindle Fire, whatever you want, BlackBerry, for the folks that are still doing that. And in a way that sort of tries to abstract away as much of the platform differences as possible and still allow people to program in JavaScript and HTML. Whereas a mobile website can't integrate with a lot of the hardware on a particular device, with Cordova, there are plugins that you can use to access that hardware. For example, an accelerometer or a camera, although some of those things you can still access through HTML with the appropriate APIs. So to get started with Cordova, you can download it and install it, but one of the easiest ways is to use Node.js. Who's played with Node.js before? Okay. If you're going to be doing web development moving forward, ASP.NET is a popular framework and will continue to be, but one of the things that's happening is that some of the tooling that people are starting to use exists within Node.js. So you might be doing ASP.NET development, but you might be managing your scripts and your CSS libraries with a tool called Bower, for example. You might be doing some of your script consolidation with a tool called Grunt. So we're sort of seeing this JavaScript engine being bolted onto the side of a lot of applications. Cordova is no exception. Its tool chain is built on top of Node.js. And it runs fine on Windows. In fact, it runs really well on Windows. So to get started with Cordova, you have to install it. So you need to download and install Node.js. Then you need to go npm install -g Cordova. And then you can drop in the command prompt and generate a file structure, which is what you need to get started with Cordova development. So I'm going to jump back over to the machine here and sort of walk through that scenario. Okay, so what I've got here is my PowerShell prompt, and I've got Cordova already installed. I wasn't going to put you through that process. There's a few dependencies you need to have on your machine, like Node.js itself, but you also need your Android SDKs, your Windows Phone SDKs, things like iTunes and that kind of stuff as well, potentially, depending on your platform. But what I can do is I use the Cordova command to create a new application. So I'll create an application called Hello Cordova, and you need to give it a package name. So I'll just call it example Hello Cordova. And what happens is it goes and generates a directory which has a file layout which is appropriate for this app. So if I go into the Hello Cordova directory now and go dir, you can see that there's a bunch of directories there. And what I then need to do is tell it that I want to support various platforms. So I'll go Cordova, platforms, add iOS. Now, one of the things that is a limitation of running Cordova on Windows is that you can't do iOS development, and that's because iOS compilation can only happen on a Mac. On the flip side, you can't compile Windows Phone applications on a Mac, so I think we'll call it even, all right? But you can certainly do Android, and you can certainly do Windows Phone. Yep. Now, Windows Phone, it's Windows Phone 8. I think there's 7 support as well, but Windows Phone 8 in particular, it's not the new AppX or Universal App model, right? So they haven't updated the tool chain to support the AppX package format or that particular version of the runtime. Now that I've got this application installed, what I want to do is, the platform's installed, now what I want to do is look at the code. So in the config.xml file, you'd see the kind of typical information you'd see in any sort of application package. Let me try and... anyone know the Sublime shortcut for font? There we go. Okay. So we've got our, hopefully everyone can see that okay. We've got our XML file here which describes my application. In the www directory, I've actually got my HTML file and I've got a bunch of scripts, and you'll see in the scripts here we've got the code that actually contains the code that's executed when the application spins up. But then I've also got things like support for Windows Phone 8, and we've got a bunch of libraries and a project layout, so you can see that this is the native wrapper that goes around my HTML and JavaScript code. Okay. So in the JSON file, so for each platform I add, there's a plugins directory, and I've got an Android plugin.json. And you can see here, I've got no plugins installed on my machine. So what I'm going to do next is actually install a plugin. So Cordova, plugins. Now, what plugins I support, they're all sort of published centrally. So there's a Cordova plugin library. You can also have your own repository or your own plugin model tucked away in a version control repository somewhere. But if I jump to the browser here, you can see that there's this plugins.cordova.io. And what I can do is I can search for a plugin. So for example, Let's say that I've got a capability on my iPhone that I want to leverage, such as bending. Oh, actually, I haven't implemented yet that because it's not cross-platform. But if I jump into the command prompt, I can actually do the same command. So if I want to search for, say, something to do with working with a battery, well, what it's going to do is go off to that same repository, which I just searched, and it's telling me that there is a plugin called Org Apache Cordova battery-status. So what I can actually do is install that. And what it's going to do is go and download that plugin, and it's going to apply code for that plugin against each platform. So each plugin has code in it for various platforms of support. So not all plugins support all platforms. All right, that's the first thing you need to understand. The other thing you need to understand is that plugins themselves have quirks. So if I search for the battery plugin here, one of the things in the Cordova documentation you'll find is that for each platform, they've got a list of quirks. So for example, on Windows Phone 7, there is no level property. You can't query the battery to find out how much battery is left. Okay. But I'm running Windows Phone and Android here, so it should be fine. So once you've got the plugins installed, you can then go and leverage that plugin in your code. So one of the things I want to do is that when my device is ready, I want to wire up to receive battery status events. So if I go in and I say window, add event listener, and I'm going to listen for the battery status event, and then I want to call app on battery status. False, so I won't propagate that. Okay, so then I can go and add some code which implements that function. So I'll say on battery status, and I'm going to pass in the event information, put a comma there. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to update a piece of text on that application with the battery status. So if I go into the HTML here, and just above the Cordova heading here, I'm going to put in a span with an ID of battery level. And then jump back to my JavaScript code. I'm going to just say, get me the battery level element. And I'm going to say battery level inner text equals info.level. All right, and that should give me the percentage battery charge, which is probably 100% on this particular device. So now that I've got that set up, what I want to do is run that either on my device or an emulator, and just to prove that it's cross-platform. So I'm going to drop back down to the command prompt, and I'm going to say that I want to run, because I don't have my Android device plugged in here, I'm going to say Cordova emulate Android. And what it's going to do is, because I've got the Android SDK installed here, it's going to spin up the Android AVD. See, behind the scenes, it's actually compiling a package to be deployed to the device. Okay, it'll take a couple of seconds for Android to spin up. If you're, just while we're waiting for that to come up, if you're building mobile applications, particularly cross-platform, you really need to have one of each, right? You need to have, you know, an Android device, an iOS device, a Windows Phone device. If you're shipping to BlackBerry, in your BlackBerry, emulators don't really cut it in terms of productivity. They let you do the hello world stuff. So this is an old image, but it should come up shortly. It hasn't launched. Demo file. Okay, I'll just try that again. Since it's already compiled, it should be a bit quicker. Okay. Should be good to go now. Come on. It's running the APK. So on a physical device, it's actually quite a bit quicker. Okay, so there's the Cordova application. And I've probably got some sort of bug in my code because it didn't come up with the power. So I won't bother debugging that in the interest of time, unless I've got something wrong that's really obvious. Battery status on, battery status. Oops, there's the error. Okay. Just fix that up. Okay, so there's saying it's got 50% battery down there. So that's the Cordova development experience. And we're gonna get into Visual Studio shortly, but I wanted to use this as to sort of show you what's going on behind the scenes in Visual Studio with some new tooling. So the next thing that I want you to look at is a framework called Ionic. So there's a tool that you can install called Ionic, and you can go Ionic start, and then what you can do is so I want to start an application called Hello Ionic, and then it's got some templates that you can apply. And if the network's going well, it'll pull down that template. Ionic is a framework that sits on top of Cordova. Okay. Now, at the moment, Ionic doesn't support Windows Phone particularly well, but that support is coming. And if you're looking at standing up applications quickly, I think it's worth keeping an eye on. That's why I'm bringing it up here. So if I go into the Hello Ionic directory, I do the same thing. I go Ionic, platform, add, and I'll go Android again. Or no, heck, I'll go iOS. Actually, no, that won't work. So I'll go Android. And then what I can do is now go Ionic, emulate Android, and it'll do the same underlying Cordova compilation process that should look pretty familiar, but it's got a bunch of pre-built CSS and components to make working with this kind of application a bit easier. Okay, a couple of seconds, be here soon. Here we go. Just makes me feel good to use a command prompt, you know? Okay. Come on. Don't take this as an indication of performance of Cordova applications running on a device. It's 100% emulator. So what they've got here is just a template. And you can click on this. And it's got the slide out drawer. This is all HTML and JavaScript, okay? And if you look at the directory, well, it looks exactly the same as Cordova. It is Cordova, it's just got some extra stuff in it. So what's going on with this kind of hybrid application? The first thing is that you're writing your code in HTML and JavaScript and CSS, and then when you do the build process, it slaps that code inside WebView inside a native application. So you're literally running inside a web browser on the device, including all of the sandbox constraints that you've got. So what Cordova does to get around that is they give you a JavaScript API which detects what platform it's on and then talks to a series of plugins which are exposed to that WebView control from the host operating system. So when you write a plugin, you have some native code that runs in Java, for example, on Android, and it's injected as an object, which can then be queried from JavaScript. And that's how the plugin model works. And the Cordova takes care of weaving this together. So if you're going to build a plugin that's cross-platform, you have to write it for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. You run that entire thing through a build process, which then spits out the appropriate packages. So I've seen the Ionic framework, seen that. That gets us onto Visual Studio multi-device applications. So Visual Studio MDA is a set of tooling for Visual Studio, which simplifies the development of Cordova applications. So it's a fairly lightweight package to download and install, but the problem is that it then has all these dependencies that it goes and drops on your machine. So it takes care of installing Node for you. It takes care of installing the Ant, which is used by Cordova as for the build process, particularly for Android. It takes care of installing a JDK, SDKs, Google Chrome, which is useful for certain testing scenarios. Git, all the bits and pieces. It also installs iTunes, right? Which is the first time I installed this thing, I just about had a heart attack. Why would it be installing iTunes? But it's actually to support a really cool feature. One of the differences between the Visual Studio MDA tools and the Cordova tools that you download natively from the Apache organization is that Microsoft's taken care of building an agent that runs on your Mac that you can shell out your build process to. So you can actually do iOS development from your Visual Studio environment. So this is actually a really big plus for the MDA tools. So basically, to install the MDA remote agent on your Mac, you just go npm install, so all this stuff's Node.js, and then you spin up the MDA remote application. So I'm going to jump out into my Mac world here, and we're going to get to Xamarin shortly, but you can see here that I've got the Xamarin build host, but I'm going to spin up the VSA MDA remote. So that's now listening on port 3000, and what I can do is now push builds down to that. So let's jump back into Visual Studio, get rid of these guys, or at least, I do that all the time. Okay, so that's on my, in iOS, I've spun up the VSMDA remote application, so that's the command up the top here, and that's now running an agent on this machine. And back in Windows, I'm going to create a new application. And if I scroll down to JavaScript, you can see that there's a multi-device hybrid application. So this is your hybrid web app. I click OK. And you can see a directory which is somewhat familiar. It's not exactly the same as the Cordova layout. They do things a little bit different inside MDA. But what I can actually do now is, because I've got that build agent, I can actually go into my settings and tell Visual Studio that when it does a build, it has to run that build against a particular build host. So I need to drop out over here and figure out what my IP address is. Can't rely on DNS at the moment. Can't rely on my ability to find the IP address. And problem is, I don't know which address. My loopback, it's my bridge, it's my NIC, and five. It's probably this one. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that I want to run on iOS, and I'm going to run in an iPhone simulator. Okay. And I hit run, and it might fail here. And the reason is because the build agent's not running. And I also need to start up the simulator. Found sometimes it doesn't launch the simulator for me, so just a trap. So you can see that Visual Studio is now communicating to this machine, and in a few moments it's actually going to launch the application into the simulator. So there's my multi-device app, and that works for Android, so I can spin this up in the Android emulator as well. So it's quite a nice framework. So that's multi-device apps. I'll be getting onto Xamarin shortly. Okay, so what's happening here is we've got exactly the same model. We've got the Cordova API that we're using. In this case, to reach iOS, I'm spinning that build out to a remote machine. It's doing the build over there, and it's copying the IPA file back if I want it on my local machine, but I can also instruct it to run it in a simulator, and it spins it up on the iOS side of my environment here. There are a couple of really important differences between the config files in a native Cordova application and an MDA application. The first is that if you compare the directory structures here, notice that there's no platforms directory, whereas if I look at my Cordova application at the folder structure here, there's like, sorry, done it again. On the Cordova side, we've got the plugins directory, we've got the platforms directory, but in Visual Studio, we don't really have that. We've got still got the directory where you can merge in the platform-specific code, but we don't have the platforms directory itself. The problem with that is that we also don't have the plugin XML file for the JSON file that's used for each particular platform to decide what plugins are available. And the way that's done inside Visual Studio is that they've put a piece of UI on top of the config.xml file, and I can go in and I can say which particular plugins I want to use. Now, they've got some out-of-the-box plugins here that they support, including things like the Azure Mobile Services Client, which is an important thing if you're going to build a mobile backend. So that's the way that works, and that's all persisted in the config file. So if I save that and then open that config file as XML, you can see it's just a little bit different, right? The way that they manage plugins is a little bit different, but it works. So that's enough of the multi-device applications. So let's look at hybrid native applications, and this is where we start looking at Xamarin. So a hybrid native application is, I've separated it from native. Strictly speaking, if I build an application using something like Xamarin, when that code is compiled, it is as good as native code. It's calling the native APIs. The user interface is native code, right? But the language that I'm coding in is whatever that particular platform supports. So in the case of Xamarin, that's C#. So I can code in C#, call against the iOS APIs natively, and I get a pretty good experience. So let's jump in and look at Xamarin. And I remember to switch this time. So I go to File, New Project, and for Xamarin, I go into Visual C#, and I go down and I pick a particular project. So in this case, I'm going to choose an iPhone application, and I'm going to create a master detail application. This is just the template. Click OK, and it's going to go and generate all my code for me. So if I look at this application, it's all C#. I go into main CS, and it looks pretty much like any other main method in any other application, but what it's doing is it's calling into this class called UI application, and UI application is part of a framework called UIKit, which is a wrapper around the iOS UIKit. So when I use Xamarin to do development, the cross-platform bit is that I can use C# across all of the platforms, but the UI technology is different for each platform. So I can have some common code like services that I shared backend logic, but the UI code is always going to be a custom write. And when you think about it, if you're trying to get an ideal, that premium experience in terms of user interface, that's probably what you want to do. Inside that app delegate, it has the code that takes care of spinning up the user interface. But in this case, I'm actually using a feature called storyboards. And so if I double click on this storyboard, what's going to happen, hopefully everything's working correctly, what's going to happen is it's going to talk to the Xamarin build host over here, and it's going to build the storyboard. So this is a storyboard like you would find in Xcode. All right, so this is one of the features in the new Xamarin version that's been released just recently. And so I can go and build my user interface out at a bit at a time. So I can go and drop in components into that user interface. And then within things like my detail view controller, I can actually work against those components. But this is all iOS specific C# code, if you will. So it's a native hybrid. So if I want to run this code, I might want to run this on a simulator. And I'm going to run it on a iPad Retina, for example. Actually, this wasn't a universal application, so I can run it on iPhone, but it won't do anything for me. So I'm just going to run it on iOS 6. I hit run. What's going to happen is it does a compilation locally. It takes that C# code, converts it to an executable, ships it across to the build host. The build host takes that, runs it through a tool called mtouch.exe, which turns that code into native, in the case of iOS, native code, and packages it up into an IPA file. And in this case, spins it up in the simulator. All right, so I'm doing cross-platform development from within Visual Studio. So one of the things that I can do with that is set breakpoints. Now, I'm not sure if it'll observe this breakpoint because I didn't set it before I ran it, but let's say that I add that and then jump in. It's now hit my breakpoint. So this is the kind of experience, this is like the Rolls-Royce experience for mobile application development, is that sort of being able to debug that cross-platform device on that machine. So Xamarin's awesome. So let's look at what's going on with it. So I write my code in C#, and then I'm using a bunch of APIs, which is just C# wrappers around the native APIs on iOS or Android. And then that entire program code, depending on the platform, runs inside the mono runtime. So if I'm on Android, it actually deploys the mono runtime. If I'm on iOS, it actually compiles down to sort of a native code, because iOS doesn't support that sort of dynamic code running in it. So the runtime environments are slightly different, but they sort of obscure away a lot of that stuff. But you might run into some debugging problems with that. Then you run it through a tool chain. So this is the iOS build chain. Or you run it through the Android tool chain. But it begs the question, if you're going to go down the path of building applications this way, how do you structure your code so that it's cross-platform in terms of the as much code as possible is shared? So what you end up doing when you're doing cross-platform development with Xamarin is you build a shared or portable class library which has as much code as possible, your domain logic, your backend services. If you're using a container, you put your container there. Your authentication and authorization from a back-end comms point of view. And then you build view models and adapters that talk to platform-specific code. And you use, on Windows, well, you're using C#, so that's kind of native, right? On Android, you've got MonoDroid, and on iOS, you've got MonoTouch, which are the underlying frameworks. And then you're using a native user interface driven through these native APIs. The next technology I want to look at is Xamarin Forms, and it's an example of an interesting technology that's been released just recently. And we're running short on time, so I'll go really quick. Xamarin Forms allows you to write and share the UI code across platform. So if I cancel this project and run File, New, Project, and I drop down into mobile apps, we've got a shared blank application. And what's going to happen here is it's going to generate a shared library, and it's going to generate a project for Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. And so if I go in, you can see that in my application code here, I am imperatively constructing a page that I want to display to the end user. Now, you can actually use Xamarin to do this as well, to do data binding. So we won't have time to show that, but there is XAML support here as well. The IntelliSense is a bit limited. But what we can do is then take that piece of UI description and spin it up in the appropriate platform. So if you look at the iOS package and you look at the app delegate, there's no storyboard anymore because all the user interface is defined in the shared library. But what we do do is we initiate the Forms UI code, we new up a window, and then we take our main page, and there is an extension on that class which takes that sort of abstract description of what you want the UI to look like and converts it into a controller that iOS can use. So what you end up with is a whole bunch of code that just adapts to each particular framework. So if we look at the Android code, we can see that you've got your main activity, you initiate the forms, and you get the main page to get the activity. If you look at Windows Phone, you look at the main page, what we do is we instantiate the page, which is the sort of the window frame, and then what we do is we take the main page from the app and we embed that as a child element, okay, as content. And so that's how they adapt this common UI layer. The nice thing about this is that everything south of that Xamarin Forms layer can be shared code across platform. And that's really powerful. So, wrapping up very shortly. In general, I tell people to be wary of dependencies when they're doing mobile development. All right, there are lots of frameworks out there that say that they make cross-platform development easier, but unless you have the exact same problem that the author of that framework intended, it can make your life harder. Those frameworks tend to try to bend the operating system to the specific UI pattern that that framework author is familiar with. Xamarin Forms is no exception. It's an MVVM framework, but what it does a little bit differently is allows you to abstractly define your user interface as well as your view models. And so that's why I think it's quite a compelling technology. Still pretty new. One of the things that you'll notice if you're coming from a XAML world is data binding, right? Data binding to me is the feature that I miss most when I'm jumping between platforms. It's a killer feature more than anything else. I'd even take data binding over inversion control any day in an application. So internal and alternatives to Xamarin Forms, you can roll your own MVVM framework if you want. Check out MVVM Cross or MVVM Lite. They've all had a stab at doing the cross-platform thing. Your mileage may vary. I've seen people who recommend MVVM Cross. I've seen people who swear at the author on a daily basis. Try it out. Xamarin Forms might be the thing for you. Xamarin Forms might be the thing that drives you nuts. So how do you decide the approach? Well, out of all the ones that we've looked at, firstly, you need to consider the usage pattern of your users. If it's a casual usage pattern, if the user's likely to discover your application via a web search, and if it's okay for the user to bounce off and never come back to your application, so it's a really casual application, why are you building an application at all? It could just be a mobile site. But you must build an application if you want some kind of offline workflow, if you want some sort of push notification to the device, if you want background execution, so working with geolocation and tracking. Or if you need to do sandbox busting integration, so there's something on the device you need to talk to, like a barcode reader, you typically need to build an app in that case, although some platforms get around that. So then you've got to ask yourself, are you going to go hybrid web or native? Hybrid web sometimes gives you a little bit more reach. Okay, so consider whether you need to get onto a device which Cordova supports, but say maybe Xamarin doesn't. But on the flip side, it can be quite complex to build plugins on all three platforms. If you're just supporting iOS, Android, and Windows Phone, Xamarin's going to be better. You also need to consider the experience of the team. If you've got a bunch of really good JavaScript and HTML developers, Cordova might be for you. But if your team is full of C# developers, Xamarin might be for you. That's kind of pretty obvious stuff. And also consider the customer's desires. Sometimes if you're working with an organization that's building a marketing application, they might want to go native because they just want that really tight experience. I haven't touched on 100% native, right? So I'm not going to break out into Objective-C code here, but it's still a valid choice. If you need zero-day support for a new platform, then sometimes you might want to go native. It's still an option. Or there's some unique platform features which aren't cross-platform anyway. Or you want minimal shared logic. Sometimes it can be easier to go native if you've got no shared logic between the applications. But I think the number one reason for looking at native is for self-education, because with all of the approaches that we've spoken about so far, nothing gets you away from having to learn the platform you're targeting. So what would I do? It depends. Does it need to be an app? I like working with C Sharp. I would probably favor Xamarin Forms. As long as you can live with your dependencies and learn the platforms you're targeting with, I'm pretty happy. The choice is up to you. Cordova is useful. I would probably go Xamarin in a lot of cases. So, questions. I realize I'm running late on time, so I'll let Nick come up and get set up. And whilst I'm packing up, I'll answer questions. Sorry, Nick.